Good afternoon. I'm going to cover a few of the environmental considerations as we look at short rotation woody crops. And it's interesting to watch the scenario here unfold. We did a lot of work on this in the early 90s. It stopped for 10 or 15 years, and now it's back on the main agenda for bioenergy. And that's because the drivers in the situation are certainly have changed over the last 10 or 15 years. We have drivers of greenhouse gas emissions, climate change, the notion of energy independence, and the mandate from the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007, which basically states that by 2022, we're supposed to produce 36 billion gallons of renewable fuels, and it's supposed to level out in terms of the ethanol from corn production at about 15 billion gallons. And then as we look at advanced biofuels, the proportion of cellulosic biofuel that's part of that is supposed to go up into the 70% range. At least that's the projections. So this is some of the background driver that creates a reaction, in my opinion, of increased energy from biomass. The reason we're having the symposium this week, again, would have been unthought of 10 or 15 years ago. And then energy from biomass conversion technologies is part of the reaction with new and progressive technologies trying to come on board as quickly as possible. Now, from the forestry option side, there are a number of options here. Forestry has been in the biomass business for hundreds of years. Some of the options that are there and have been are harvesting harvest residue. So after a harvest is completed, there's a lot of residue left on site. That's an option to use for biomass. Using understory species that have traditionally been looked at as weeds or nuisance species, that's another alternative. Thinning, particularly with high intensity plantation management, is an option. And thinning for fire protection, particularly in the West, has certainly come under a lot of study of late. Conventional forestry has always provided a lot of energy. And then there's the newer intercropping systems where we're looking at forestry intercropped with warm season perennial grasses. And short rotation woody crops has come back into the picture more relevant than ever over the last few years. The system involves a lot of intensity, at least relative to forestry practices, not so much relative to annual row crop agriculture. There's mechanical site preparation, disking, bedding, subsoiling, use of genetically improved stock. Genomics have come into the picture, particularly with hybrid poplars, competition control with herbicides, fertilizing, pest control. Irrigation has been used in some systems, and then frequent, in quotes, entry, again, it depends on your context. Relative to annual row crop agriculture, it's only every couple of years, but relative to a 50 or 60 year rotation of trees, it's infrequent. But short rotation woody crops are on the site more frequently than most systems in terms of traditional forestry with a 3 to 15 year harvesting cycle. The other thing that comes into play for forestry is the need for road maintenance to access these sites. And all of the forestry research has shown that road maintenance and road production have been major sources of sediment that we grapple with all the time. The species are listed here, everything from eucalyptus to pine. They all have their benefits and their shortcomings. So we have a wide array of woody species that are available for short rotation systems. I'd like to put this into context. If we talk about forest management, this is just a conceptualization of the forest management continuum, where we go everything from wilderness forests, which are managed for wilderness with very little entry and little active management, but the management objective is to hands off, all the way to the more intensive short rotation woody crops with extensive forest, intensively managed regrowth, natural regenerated forests after harvesting, to planted forests. The production value goes up, the management intensity goes up as you go from one system to the other, and the conservation value generally goes down. But all of these systems here are bioenergy sources and have been used as bioenergy sources for a long time, but short rotation woody crops is what we'll focus on. If you look at the contrast within that continuum from wilderness to short rotation, in all types of environmental measurements, you go from high biodiversity to low biodiversity, for example, low soil disturbance to high, low cultural input to high cultural input as you go across that continuum. So if we look at it in this context, short rotation woody cropping systems are quite intensive. If you put those into an overall landscape land management continuum, the picture changes a little bit. So again, it depends on your context. If we have high production values of annual row crop agriculture versus lower production values of forest land, and the conservation value generally goes down as we go across that scale. And then again, if you put it in the continuum, the position of short rotation woody crops, my point here is it depends on the context and your perspective as to how you look at its environmental impacts. If we look at the sustainability picture, we all know about the economic, social, and political side, the ecological viability. This overlapped zone here is changing all the time. As our previous speakers mentioned, I believe, economic feasibility, social desirability, they're always changing as our cultural paradigms and economic system changes. I would argue right now the economic feasibility is shrinking down with our economic downturn, so this overlaps always changing. But if we look at the ecological viability and the environmental considerations, there's a whole slew of complex interrelated environmental factors that we have to consider as we look at long-term sustainability of short rotation woody crops. Everything from soil quality, genetic modifications, habitat biodiversity, land use impacts and conversions, carbon balances, life cycle assessments, water, greenhouse gas, air, other ecological services. All of these are part of the picture as we look at long-term sustainability. A couple of just very brief examples, reflections of quite a bit of literature review I did for this talk. If we look at water use as an environmental consideration, some studies across Germany and the UK and Sweden, we have high evapotranspiration rates, 266 to 600 millimeters per year relative to the annual precip. A result of this high water use is reduced stream flow, reduced aquifer recharge, and reduced peak flows. If we look at erosion estimates, croplands overall on a global scale estimated at roughly 18 metric tons per hectare per year, forests very low at 0.1 to 0.2. If we harvest the forest, it goes up at least for a short time from 2 to 17. These are just broad global averages, but to put things in perspective for short rotation woody crops, initially we'll have high rates of erosion, and then rather quickly as we get cover, canopy cover, and litter layer cover returning, it declines back down to 0 to 0.2 milligrams or megagrams per hectare per year. We look at sediment export. This is some work we did in the Mississippi Delta where we converted cotton, annual production of cotton to short rotation cottonwood. We looked at 3 years from the planting, spring of 1995, up to harvesting of the cottonwood in the summer of 1997. And this is just sediment loss in kilograms per hectare. We get a tenfold reduction when we put short rotation woody. This is hybrid poplar in here compared to short cotton production. So we get a tenfold decrease in sediment. Similar results with nutrients, nutrient export, and we get increases in forest or soil biodiversity and increases in carbon sequestration. So a very positive picture there relative to annual cotton production. We look at carbon balances. Short rotation woody crops can increase carbon storage by about a megagram per hectare per year. This is just a generalization. Biodiversity, this is plant biodiversity, can double in comparison to previous cropland. This is work done in Europe. So there are definite positive environmental outcomes. What I've done here is just summarized the expected environmental effects of short rotation woody crops, looking at a series of environmental effects ranging from evapotranspiration, water table, discharge measured in streams and rivers, low flow frequency in streams and river, water quality, and then into the soil, erosion, soil quality, carbon sequestration, and then greenhouse gas emissions and biodiversity. And this is looking at a spectrum of pre-existing land uses ranging from row crops, marginal abandoned lands, conservation reserve program to forest lands. And in general, we expect ET rates to go up when we look at short rotation woody crop versus row crop. Most of the data show that there's more evapotranspiration, more here in marginal lands, and then less in forest lands. The arrows go up and down because conservation reserve program are heterogeneous responses to that program in terms of crops going to grassland, shrubs, woody species. So it's very hard to make a generalization. It really depends on specific sites. But overall, what I want you to see is evapotranspiration would go up with the short rotation versus ag fields. Water tables would consequently go down. Discharge would go down. And then low flow frequency, which is so important for maintaining aquatic habitat, we'd have a higher rate of low flow frequencies, which are degrading the system relative to row crop agriculture and marginal lands. In contrast, compared to forests, there'd be less water use, fewer low flow frequency events, and that would be a benefit to potentially for aquatic habitat. Then if we look at all the water quality aspects, they generally improve with short rotation woody crops and degrade relative to forests. So that's what we have here in the red box. And then the soil properties in general improve compared to row crop or marginal abandoned lands and are in general degraded compared to forest lands. So this just gives an overview of the picture I tried to capture in a short 20-minute talk in terms of the expected environmental effects ranging from improvements to degradation. But I think the key point here is it depends on the context and the perspective. There's modifiers of these environmental effects. Certainly, it's very site-specific, depending on climate, soil, geology, topography, and hydrology. And then there's all the management effects that are going to modify everything from the species selection, genetics, density management, weed and pest control, site preparation, fertilizing, the crop age, rotation lengths, and harvesting techniques. All of these will affect the environmental consequences. And then the other context that's important that was mentioned briefly in the previous slide is what is the context of the effect over time? Are we looking at months, years, decades in terms of the environmental indicator? Once we have the conversion, we look at it. It could be a month or two later. Are we improving the indicator? We may be. Are we unchanged or resistant to change? Has it degraded? And then as we look further down the timeline, how do we evaluate the effect in terms of the short rotation crop? And then depends on where we look at it on the temporal scale. It also depends on where we look at it on the spatial scale. We have to keep that in mind when we blow up from field scale to landscape scale to large regional scales. The other thing that's not mentioned often is alternative options for short rotation woody crops. And they've certainly been proven to be very effective for agricultural buffers, for water quality protection. They have lots of positive aspects for phytoremediation, desalinization. They're really coming into play in Western Australia, where there's problems with wheat farming and salts being deposited. They actually are growing biofuels there with short rotation, mainly eucalyptus, to lower the water table and move that salt zone down out of the rooting zone. So the purpose there is, even in the dryland agriculture of Australia, using eucalyptus to lower the water table and move that salt layer below the root zone. They have a lot of potential for wastewater recycling, biosolid disposal and recycling, and they've been used very commonly as windbreaks. So they're quite variable. They have a lot to offer in terms of environmental benefits. So in terms of the next step, I think the effects that we have from mostly field scale or small field scale research certainly have to be upscaled to watershed, landscape, and regional scales. And this is starting to be done. Certainly at Oak Ridge, they've done a lot of work on swap modeling of the effects of short rotation and switchgrass conversion on large regional scales that will affect hypoxia, for example, in the Gulf of Mexico. The need to use our models is really pressing. And then in general, I think some of the best options are converting marginal lands. There's hundreds of millions of hectares globally. As a general ballpark figure, that we're looking at about 4.3 megagrams of biomass per hectare per year potentially available there, producing about 10% of our energy needs. In the U.S., we have about 200 million hectares of forest land, 140 million of crop land, and then in the marginal crop pasture land area, we have about 47 million, 32 million in federal programs. And the potential there for up to maybe 60 million hectares, but we have to consider the economics and the social and the political and the policy arena and how that affects how much gets converted. But there's potential there for 60 million hectares potentially to be converted. So in closing, a few thoughts. I think the short rotation energy systems provide vital links in our continuum of forest management options. Certainly they provide a role and an important one in meeting growing energy demands. Each link has its value, ranging from preservation to high production. In terms of relative forest values. Sustainable management of any of these systems is certainly going to depend on the fundamental conservation of what drives the system, and that's soil and water resource conservation. And then I think one of the points I'd like to make is environmental effects are dependent on the context, both temporally and spatially. We have to be careful about making judgments based on short-term field studies. They're critically important. They're the data we need for our modeling, but we have to be careful about the perspective and context. And what our point of reference is very important. If we're comparing short rotation woody crops with annual high-intensity farming, they look pretty good from an environmental standpoint. If we're comparing them to wilderness forests, they may not look so good. So keep the context in mind as we judge these systems. I think the opportunities to utilize these systems as a part of the answer to many of the complex problems we face are unprecedented. It's very exciting to have a symposium like this that brings this out to a lot of discussion among our colleagues. I think there's a lot of opportunity to look at these systems, everything from perennial grasses to trees. So thank you.
Good to meet you.
Sorry I'm late.
No problem.
I think we have time for maybe one quick question for Steve, if anyone has a question.
As
sure.
We're thinking about using these quick turnaround woody biomass plants for biomass production, we're also, of course, harvesting the minerals on that, from that site, right? So, us being able to recover those minerals during conversion of these biofuels, or do you see
Yeah, there's been a fair amount of work on nutrient removal, if that's what you mean by minerals, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium. The nutrient removal certainly has to be taken into account in terms of what's being removed on a 3 or 5 or 10 or 15 year cycle. And again, relative to annual removals and annual crops, this looks pretty good. But in terms of sustaining nutrient pools, there certainly may be a need for fertilizing to maintain those systems. That's why I mentioned the biosolid and wastewater systems, if it's practical and economic, may provide another way to recycle and get those nutrients back on the site. But we certainly have to take into account accounting on nitrogen, phosphorus, and any of the other nutrient removals from the site. And that's been pretty well documented on field-scale studies. In general, it's pretty long-term sustainable, but we have to be careful, and it depends on the site and the soil type and all the site-specific factors. But
I heard some of
them
bleak.
I'm sorry?
I heard some of them bleak.
Bleak? Sure. If you over-fertilize, they'll leak. And in forest systems, I just finished a PhD student on leaky systems in the Appalachians in West Virginia. If you have acid rain input on an old forest, shallow soils, it's going to leak nitrogen in the stream water. We measure it all the time. So systems tend to be tight in nitrogen, but if you're producing a lot of fertilizer and you have fallow land for 8 months of the year, they're liable to leak some nitrogen. That's fairly easy to take into account, and I think we can address it. So I don't see that as a major problem, but it's something we need to take into account. Thanks for your question.